How many of you are glad you're here? Now, be very honest with me now. Put your hands down. When you first arrived, were you happy you were here? Who was it? Who wasn't? Who had... I'm grateful for honesty. What did you think? Now, don't answer. But what did you think when you first saw Glen Eyrie? Not very many months back, a group of fellows from the Glen that were in training asked if they could come out to my house, and they did on three occasions. 3 weeks straight, and one evening, young fellow said to me, "Mrs. Trotman, what was Dawson Trotman's magic?" Well, you know, it's rather laughable, but I didn't laugh. Nor I didn't smile. And so I said, tell me about it. You know, I thought I knew what he was talking about, but I've long since learned not to quote someone until they have said it, you know. So I asked him, and he said, well, I came to the Glen, and it's for rich folks. And I said, that's right. It is for rich folks. And he said, it's just far too nice for Christians. And I said, do you mind sharing with me why? Well, he did. And it made me think back to the first time I saw Glen Eyrie. I remember Dawson was in San Diego one year. And he called and said to me, "Sweetheart, would you be kind enough to meet Phil and I at 509 Monterey Road in South Pasadena at 4:30 on Tuesday?" Well, I'd never heard of 509 Monterey Road, South Pasadena. And so I said, "Who lives there?" And he says, "Just meet me there and find out." Well, at that time we had an Oldsmobile, and he'd taken that, and so I was using the Model A. And so I drove over from Los Angeles to South Pasadena. Has anyone seen 509 ever? 509 Monterey Road in South Pasadena. Well, I drove up this slight hill in my Model T, and when I saw this huge home and this huge estate, I knew I had the wrong address. And would you like to know what I told us when I saw him? I said, "You know, sweetheart, I didn't know whether to get out and pick the car up and take it in, or expectorate, or just sit still and think, well, I had the wrong address." Well, we lived there 10 years. And 509 was huge. I mean, it was large. So from 509, I came out here to see Glen Eyrie before I knew we were going to have it. At that time, we were perhaps going to take care of it for evangelist Billy Graham and his school. So, well, I nearly fainted. Every home we'd ever lived in was larger than the one before. I had always done all of the cooking. And when I came to the Glen and I went through the kitchen, just the pans alone scared me half to death. You know, they're huge, great big things like this, and they were heavy with nothing in them for me. Well, I knew, of course, I'd never, ever have the responsibility of Glen Eyrie, so I enjoyed seeing it immensely, really, I did. Until the day came when God in his wonderful, wonderful grace made possible this property to be used for his honor and for his glory. And only that. Well, we were still living in California, and I got a phone call from Mr. Trotman, and he was here. And he asked me if I'd be kind enough to meet him here, that he would be leaving for England. You know, meet him here, he'd be leaving for England. So John Crawford, Will Hopkins, and I were to leave by car. And so I brought my father-in-law along for his 81st birthday. And what Dawson wanted to do was to turn over the glen to me. We didn't have any of our office crew living here then, just a nucleus of fellas to keep the place up. This building here had not been used for 25 or 27, I guess it was, years then. And I remember from the first water spigot to the last, it took 45 minutes. I remember that, to walk that and learn that route. And then, this is a big order for a dumb gal, at least. You know. And I said to Doss, this is far too big for me. And he said, yes, but it isn't too big for your God. So I said to myself, we'll see. Well, that was in 53. And I flew back home for a weekend with Westmont College women. And then took 3 weeks to pack and drove across. And arrived the last of September, or the first day of October, and the next day it snowed. If you've had any thoughts about this being too good, well, you're here. You know? Aren't you? You bet your life you're here. And you're very much alive, and you're enjoying it. And I like to think of Glen Eyrie this way. Before Zacchaeus could see Jesus go by, a tree had to be planted at a certain day, a certain time, and certain soil to be tall enough so that Zacchaeus could climb that tree to see Jesus go by. When the gentleman who built this, William Jackson Palmer, built Glen Eyrie, when he first arrived here, he had to fight off a fierce, well, the most fierce tribe Indians know. And as I recall, there were about 300. Can't you imagine when Mr. Palmer came out here and decided, well, I'm going to, just going to make this my home, and I'm going to build a 67-room castle, and I'm going to bring the roof across from the old country, you know, from England. Can't you just hear the Pharisees, the scribes in town saying, oh, how ridiculous, you know? But I like to think of it this way. You know, Jesus knew, God knew, that there would come a day and a time when our organization would need just this. So it had to be planted and planned and produced at a given time. And what I love about the Glen is that our men are dedicated, they're spiritual, they walk with God, loads of fun, but they're down to business for God. And this place is used for his honor and for his glory alone. But dear, dear gang, it didn't just happen. And have you ever questioned in your own life Why me? Why do I have to go through this? Why can't I have what she has? And why can't I have what he has? And why do they have to have all the money? Why can't, you know, we just why ourselves to death? Well, see, if you could always remember that each thing that happens in our life or your life is God meant it for good. And you're not here by accident. Not here at Glen Eyrie. By accident. You're here by appointment, whether you like it or not. And you know, there's many appointments we don't like. Right? You bet your life. And I don't know about you, but I like things too big for me. I really do. Hard, yes. And I don't like hard things. But never forget, beloved, that he's always with you. He never, ever will leave you. You agree? Is he really with you? How do you know? How do you know? That's it. And he tells you so. You aren't kidding. But listen, I could tell you till the cows came home that I loved you. But how would you... Well, now, don't get excited. He starts rearing back like I'm going to come and... I have a grandson almost old as you are. No kidding. You get my point, though. God says he loves you. You know? But how do you know he loves you? Now you answer, since you just answered like you did. How do you know?
Well, he tells me.
Already, but he tells you. But how do you know he loves
changed
you?
Changed my life.
From what?
From a life of absolute self-centered thinking to absolute out-thinking.
All right. After your conversion, what's the very first thing that you noticed in your life? One word.
I still sin.
Four letters. That's S-I-N. N-E-R.
Four letters?
S-I-N-E-R. No, four letters. You began to what? Love. Love everybody. Did you?
What's the exception of one or two?
You love them now?
I try.
Isn't it glorious being a Christian? Isn't it? I often think of Evangelist Billy Graham's words when he says, you know, today's been so wonderful that I can hardly wait for tomorrow. And that's the way I feel. And it isn't because the day's been easy. It isn't because it's been cool. And it isn't because I haven't had a tough phone call. Or perhaps a tough letter, or letters, or disappointments, or change of plans. But that's part of the training up that God requires of us who are in Christ Jesus. He says, grow up. And we are to train up. If you've never thought of the two words, jot the words down, train up. And start thinking on them. What does it mean to train up? Proverbs 2:26 says, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he'll depart from it. He will not depart from it. All right, is that a promise? Do you believe it? You know, and so do I, and so did I. But I think that's one verse that's given me not heartache and not trouble, but I think that's one verse that sent me to my knees just about more than any other verse pertaining to my children, our own personal children. And now our grandchildren. You know, Jeremiah 1 is an interesting chapter. And if you aren't acquainted with it, we'll start. Jeremiah, Jeremiah, the weeping saint, bickers with God. Jeremiah, God gives Jeremiah a responsibility, and Jeremiah says, well, now you know, Lord, I can't do that. I'm just a child. I can't do it. So God says to Jeremiah, listen, you just go, Jeremiah, and you open your mouth, and I'll fill it. This is in Jeremiah 1. And having said that, I'm going to share with you a little bit about the beginning of our lives together in the Navigators. And for any I or we or me, let's just, we're brothers and sisters in Christ here, and let's just turn it into praise to God, because it isn't to be I or me or personal as such, quote and unquote. It's to His honor and to His glory, and if it isn't, I better sit down. I started going with Dawson 2 months before I was 14, and he was 8 years older, and he was 21 months old in the Lord when he led me to Christ, and he gave me a very tough assignment right off the bat. We were not going together, by the way, at this time, and he gave me the book of Proverbs. A chapter a day. A verse a day. An hour a day alone with God. A soul a day. There were 13 items. It was either sink or swim. And I could care less about the man. I did not like him. I mean, I did not love him. I liked him. But I wasn't in love with him. But I fell in love with the Lord Jesus Christ. Well, I sank. On my 13 items. How many knew Dawson in the room? How many ever met him? Nobody? Boy, heavens holds much for you. He was hard-hitting. He was very hard on himself. Therefore, he was hard on everyone else, including me. And he was heavily disciplined. And he believed that God meant what he said, and he said what he meant. And I recall when he asked me to marry him, I never thought of such a thing. Never entered my head. And I wasn't 13. You must remember now, we started going together before, just a little before I was 14, but I was older when he asked me to marry him. And it was at high noon. And we came home, he brought me home, and I said that when I see you this evening, I'll give you the answer. So I recalled walking to my my parents' front door, and I took hold of the knob of that door, and I said, now, Lord, it would be nothing with you to show me if this man is the one that you want for my life. And I reminded the Lord, I feel sorry for him for asking me, but I'm happy he did. And I often wondered if he ever felt sorry that he had. Because honestly, gang, I was his toughest contact. Timothy or Spencer, whatever you want to call it. But love is a wonderful thing. It covers much. And in God's Would you hold your hand up when I have five more minutes, please, John? I don't have my watch on. Thank you. In God, God has a plan for your life, the same as he had a plan for mine, and has a plan for us. And if you aren't familiar with Psalms 139, well, jot it down, and sometime in a quiet time in your life, start pursuing it. And start, I mean, read it all the way through. Then come back and read just a few verses, or a verse, and just think, or a word, just one word, or two. Just to search me, oh God. And know my thoughts and see if there be any wicked way in me. We went together 5 years, and I was 18 and a half when we were married. And I really thought, gang, that God had all the keys to my heart and life. When before God and these many witnesses, I said yes to Doss, that I would be his faithful companion. But I could be speaking to the wrong group, because I am sure that none of you have ever been troubled with your disposition or your heart or your mind. Or your stubbornness, or I want my way, or else, you know. So I'm going to just share a little very personal thing with you. I mean, it reveals me, and it's hard for me to tell it, but I'm going to tell it. We had been married just a little while, and Doss walked in the kitchen, and he went right over and turned the fire down under a kettle on the stove. So I said to Doss, imagine, he said, you only knew Doss. Nancy did. I said to Doss, are you going to do the cooking, or am I going to do the cooking? Oh, hate me. Doss said, did that bother you? And I said, it bothered me. And he went just like this, gang. And see if this does look a little familiar to you, my facial expression. You know what he did? Every time he passed through the kitchen, he adjusted the fire. And you know, dear ones, it never needed it after that initial contact. But what was he doing? He was dealing with the old man or old woman in me. We were riding along the street. We were just brand new newlyweds. And had been on our honeymoon, and we're back and had adjusted into our home. And we were riding along, and so I said to Doss, if you don't appreciate me, I know a man that does. Well, what a girl wants at that time is for the honey to pull over to the side of the road and say, well, come on. But, you know. But he didn't. He turned right around the road and took me home. And when we went home, we hadn't been home yet. And when we drove in the driveway, out came my mother and father running out to meet me. And I sat there like I'd lost my last friend, or that my husband said I looked like somebody throwing a rotten tomato in my face. How do you explain that to your parents? But thus endeth the matter. I never had that problem again. Now, don't you go home after you're married, or if you're married, men, and do likewise. Come on. Your wife, girlfriend, sweetheart, honey, it wouldn't be me anyway. But see, actually our first year was the hardest. During our first few years, we had Minutemen work. He had a Minutemen team before we were married, and I finally prevailed on him to include the gals, their girlfriends or sweethearts or whoever, and that meant me too. So this is how we actually got started as far as the girls were concerned, because up until then there had been no girls. In my last year of high school, I was working for a man who was in merchant marine work, and he worked with sailors, merchant marine. So I came home one evening to my dad, and I said, "Dad, I am sick and tired of hearing about sailors. It's all I hear." And I was this man's secretary. So my dad said, "You don't have to work, sweetheart, so quit." So I gave him 2 weeks' notice, and one of the happiest days of my life was when I quit, little dreaming that that was going to be my life work. Sailor. And I recall when I saw Dawson next. Now, we weren't married. I was a senior in high school. By the way, he graduated from the same school I did. And he graduated 23, and I graduated in 32. And he always said it's because I was so dumb. It might have been true. But, dear fellows and girls, never, ever, ever, never, ever treat lightly any constructive criticism or helps or training or correction. I don't know what word you want to use. A wise man. What? What will a wise man do? As far as correction goes, he'll love you. He'll love you for it. Little did I know then, precious friends, what God had in store for me. We were married, opened our home, and it's been open ever since. And when we were going, after we were engaged, you know, I often have to snicker and smile or whatever you call it to myself. Dawson got so many things settled before we were married. Like, would you be willing, you know, to, that our door, that we just throw the lock away? That we never lock our door? Well, you know, when you're in love, you know, of course, it doesn't matter to me. He's going to be there, so. Nobody could come in our house, you know, without being invited. So why not? That sounded romantic to me. So I thought, well, that'd be fun. You know. Isaiah 60:11. Anyone know it? John.
Therefore the gate shall be open continually. They shall not be shut day or night, that men may bring unto thee the forces of the Gentiles, and that their kings may be brought.
And that was the verse that we, on our knees before God, before we were married, made a pact with God that we'd never go back on our word. And a brother of mine said to me many years ago, if I could live the kind of life that you and Dawson live, I'd quit my job today and go into it tomorrow. Well, what he meant was this. We lived a life of faith, strictly on faith. And we had much more than he had. And he had a very good job, good pay. And that's what he really meant. He didn't mean the Christian aspect of it. He meant the softness of it. And I said, you just go right ahead, and calling my brother by name, and God will bless you for it. But it'll cost you, and it'll cost you dearly. You never again will have any privacy. You can't leave things laying around like you do now, you and your wife. You'll be on call 24 hours a day. And when I got through, he said, stop. I'll just keep on keeping on. Just what I'm doing now. I have a very rich heritage. To be real honest, I'd have to say that I wasn't always appreciative when I was corrected. Girls, has anyone walked into your life and said, how do you take correction? Has anyone walked into your life and said to you, how does it feel when you're ignored? Or when your opinion isn't asked? Or has anyone walked into your life and said, honey, when you told a story last, I hardly recognized it. Are you jealous? Have any jealousy? Are you always truthful? Always? Always. Always truthful. I'm very grateful that I was started in the Proverbs, and I have never missed a day since reading a proverb, a chapter a day. For 7 years, I read 1 Corinthians 13 because I felt that love was lacking in my life. And then in asking God for a substitute for 1 Corinthians 13 that had something in it that I was not doing, I was led to Philemon, one little chapter. You know. And Paul says of the slave that he had led to Christ in prison, when he sent him back, he said, now if he's harmed you or done you wrong, well, put that to my account. You know anything about that? No, when someone does something or has sinned or fallen, do we stop to help them? Do we say, dear one, just put it to my account. I'll take the blame. And I didn't know anything about that. Put it to my account. Perhaps you've heard that after we started the servicemen's work in 1933 of March, we had never had less than 12 live with us. And I recall that for 4 years we had 30. That's day and night, 7 days a week. Girls, have you ever lived in a home with 15 grown women? And 11 grown men at the same time? You know, I prayed for a girls' work. And my girlfriend and I, never dreaming. You know, we always, if we can go out to our ministry, it just seems more glamorous and more real, right? Well, God's plan for me was it was going to be in our home. Girls' work. You know, I had 14. I was the 15th one. And it was a mission field in itself, so to speak, or school. And I have said, and I will repeat this because I've grown much older since the first time I said this, no school, and I'm all for education. Don't misunderstand. I'm all for college. I'm for any and all as I'm in God's direction. But no mission field, no Bible college, no Bible school, no university, no place that I had knew before and known since could have possibly given me the training that I had in my own home. Because, you know, when people live with you, they see what you do, and they see what you don't do, and they hear what you say, and they hear what you don't say. Like Dawson's sitting at this end, 14 feet up here, and the other's end of the table, and I'm sitting down here, and he said, and we have 30. 30 to 50, usually, at our evening meal, and he says, You know, buddy, I think that this rice has too much salt in it. Well, everybody came to my rescue. Oh, it doesn't have too much salt in it, you know. Leave her alone, you know, Dawson says, just a minute. This rice has too much salt in it. And I might forget to tell her later. And I don't want it again. You know, with too much salt in it. Well, it makes you feel good, you know, when everyone sticks up for you. You know, these old sinful hearts, or my old sinful heart, excuse me. You know, they play tricks on us, don't they? But we're instructed in the Word of God to keep our heart and our mind in unison. It says, stayed on Him. And that translates in unison. Hard, isn't it? No? Is it hard to keep your heart and mind right? At the same time? That's your life. But I'm very grateful that it took me 6 weeks, gang, to say yes on this that I'm going to share with you. Dawson said to me one night, when you get the children to bed, I would like for you to meet me in the study. And when he propositioned me with this, and in essence, this is what he said. Would you like to go on, go on the spot training? Would you like to be so trained, sweetheart, that from the Word of God, that if the time ever came that, and you found yourself all alone, no friends, that you would not know what it would be like to have 5 minutes of unbroken fellowship? Or if you, would like to so train you that if you saw the time come that you didn't have the book or a book about the book, that you would never ever have a moment of unbroken fellowship. And the third thing was, was it, did I say friends? If you found yourself without friends, that you just simply would not fall apart. And that you would know, this is the way, Lila. Just walk in it. Walk in it. Well, in my lame brain, now remember we had children. At that time we had 4. And I thought, isn't that strange? He said to me, if you're on an island all alone, is what he said. No friends. You didn't know anybody. And I thought, isn't that funny? Because the last time we took count, we had over 500 that had lived with us. Not visited us, but lived with us. And I thought, surely out of 500, I have 100 friends. You know, I'm counting the cost, to be very honest with you, because I knew what this on the... I knew what the training... He did not say at the beginning on-the-spot training, but I knew the man well enough to know that a little of what it would cost me. 6 weeks later, I called him one day. I had not given him an answer, and I called him one day at his office, which was 8 miles away, and I said, you know, I'd love to see you if it's convenient. And he said, well, I know what you want to see me about. And I said, well, what is that? And he said, well, you just come on down anytime you can, and the sooner the quicker. So I went down and told him that, and it had been a very difficult decision, because my hands were full. I had responsibility of 509 and the shopping and the cooking and the training of a girl or two. And we had a full-time girl after our fifth child who was an invalid, was born. So it was training of girls in other ways before this. Well, I can't possibly put in words how rich I am today and how very grateful I am that I had 15 years of this kind of training from the heart of the one who loved me the most, next to the living God. And he loved me in spite of me. And I often say that I, being in the way, God led Dawson Trotman. But I'm grateful I was in the way. And I'm very grateful that some of the things I've shared with you were years and years and years and years ago. To be confronted with how you dress and how you talk and how long you talk. And can you talk that long and still tell the truth? You know, that's to me, it's earth-shaking. I was very quiet, believe it or not. I was very quiet. And I remember, as though it were yesterday when we were going together, just one day I didn't answer. Refused to talk. And that started a year, off and on, of pouting. Pouting. We weren't married yet. So Dawson started looking elsewhere. And when he shared with me about a girl, I said, I could care less. You go your way, and I'll go mine. Well, my schoolwork went down like this, and his fellows that he was working with in Bible classes and so forth took to the hills because they knew something was wrong, but they didn't know what it was, and started praying for us. You see, God had a plan, and no one or nothing was going to stand in the way. I can honestly say before God that I've had a foretaste of heaven in my very own home with 25, 27 people there full time. Lorne and Lucille moved in with us. Well, Lorne moved in before they were married, and he was with us for about 2.5 years, and then Lucille moved in April before they were married in June. They lived with us through their first baby. And then when she was carrying their second, who just became a mother, by the way, Beverly, Dawson sent them to Seattle to head up our work there. And when they came back, he brought them back in 49 when he took his first world trip, and they had three children, and their third one was 5 months old, and they were part of the 30. And when Lucy first came to live with us, she was perhaps the best ironer in the world, perhaps next to Charlie Riggs' wife, LaRue. Charlie Riggs is with Billy Graham Association. And LaRue, his wife, worked for us 5 years. But Lucy could do nothing else, really. She had to be taught everything. And I have her permission to tell this, and I've told it several times. We were sitting at our dining room table, and it was packed, and it was breakfast. And Dawson said, "Who scrambled the eggs this morning?" And no one said anything. And so Dawson said, "Who scrambled the eggs this morning?" And I didn't say anything. No one said anything. So then he said to me, "Lila, who scrambled the eggs this morning?" And I said, "Lucille." And he said, "Well, they're too hard, Lucy. And I want you to, make them softer from now on." And she says, "If you don't like the way they're scrambled, you can scramble your own." I have a husband, and if he doesn't like them, he can tell me, but I don't need to have another lady's husband tell me how to scramble eggs. So Dawson says, "For the next 4 weeks," I wondered, how is he going to handle this? "For the next 4 weeks, Lucy, you scramble eggs every time Lila wants scrambled eggs served." And he said, "And by the way, have them often," he said to me. Listen, gang, I wish I had a tape recording of every time Lucy came in the kitchen with this huge big skillet. We broke 5 dozen eggs every time we had scrambled eggs. And if I wish I could have today a recording that I could play for you, every egg Lucy broke, she gave a little sermon to the egg, or to Dawson. And the egg was Dawson. I'll clue you in right now. And when Dawson got wind of what she was doing, he added another week, you know. Tough, yes. Tough training, yes. Lucy had no idea, she and Lauren, at that time, what was ahead for them. They had no idea. Costly? Costly to walk with God? Yes. Yes, it is. And in closing, in retrospect, beloved, I have looked back and seen the stepping stones in my life that God placed there to get me ready for the biggest, toughest thing that God had ever required of me. Because, you know, what we don't like as girls and women is we don't want to go it alone. We don't want to be left alone. We want security, right? Right. And all of Dawson's quote-unquote of training in my life was looking ahead to the time when the children would be raised and I could go out and minister to women. And he started me long before his death. Not long either. He started me before his death. And we look forward to the day when the children were raised and gone, and that I could be with him, because I just wasn't. I was home taking care of our 5 children and taking care of our beloved gang. And to God's praise and to his alone, I'd like to share this with you. After being confronted with exaggeration, with lying, and not jealousy, but all the other things I mentioned, I never, ever, ever had a word, ever, with any girl in our home or any helper of mine. And only God can do that. Because our temperaments are different. Her likes are different than mine. You have some talkative people. You have those that are very quiet. And you have the fellow that, you know, he's too quick. And you have the slow one. And then you have the teacher. And then you have the follower in men. We're all different. But God can enable you to become what you are becoming. Because basically, a year from today, you're going to be doing just what you're doing now. Basically. Basically. So if you aren't enjoying time alone with a living God every day, and if you aren't believing God, and I'm so grateful that Dawson left me this rich heritage. I think two of the outstanding things about this man of God was that he believed God and his faith. There was nothing ever too big. It was never too early. It was never too late. I don't think Dawson knew how to spell the word discouragement. Or can't. There's a way, but there's a better way. And when he found the better way, the old way stopped right then, to the groans of all of us. You know, when you're enjoying them, maybe you aren't, but you have in your possession a memory pack. You know, that's a story in itself. The memory versus alone. But I'm very, very grateful that I had 15 years to learn how to walk with, to be taught how to walk with God and how to become perfectly satisfied with Him and with Him alone and how to really memorize the Word of God and review it. So when the time came that I was on an island alone, and by the way, I was on foreign soil, I knew no one and no one knew me, couldn't speak their language and they couldn't speak mine. You talk about being alone. And I know what it is to feel like every friend you have has forsaken you. I've had not only the desert experience, but I've had back of the desert, and I don't like it. It's not only hot, but it's dusty and dirty. There isn't a blade of grass, and there's no one, seemingly, that cares. but God. So take Jeremiah 32, 27. No, is there anything too hard for God? And then go back to 17. No, there's nothing. There's nothing too hard for him.